morning. My name is Na Ayoko Glover from IC Securities, and I'll be acting as the convener for this call on behalf of Karl Bank Limited. Well, welcome to Karl Bank Limited's presentation of its full year 2017 financial results and operational performance. We are joined on the call by Mr. Frank Edu Jr., Managing Director of Karl Bank Limited, Mr. Philip Oredu, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Thomas Buensi Sapong, Head Financial Control, Mr. Charles Amwa, Chief Operating Officer, and Ms. Jifa Amegashi, Head of Investor Relations. The format of the call will be as follows. A presentation of the operating environment of Karl Bank Limited, both the macroeconomic environment and the banking sector, by Ms. Jifa Amegashi. Then, a presentation of Karl Bank's financial operations by Mr. Philip Oredu, and a progress of the bank's three-year strategy. The presentation will then be followed by a question and answer period. Before we begin, I would like to remind you that this is an open call, thus we can hear all background noise and conversations. Kindly put your phones on mute or silent till the question and answer period. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us on this call. Our full year 2017 results call. You should all have received a copy of the presentation by now, so we'll quickly run through the first section, which is just an overview of the macroeconomic sector and also a peer review of listed banks only. And then Mr. Oredu will take you through the actual results and then the Q&A. So moving quickly to slide number five, the operating structure of the bank remains largely unchanged since we spoke at the half year. Shareholding structures remain the same. As you know, Arise came to the shareholding of the bank in February of last year and remains a principal holder. Employee numbers have gone up slightly. At the last time we reported, we were around 790. We're now up to 814 professional staff. We have moved up from 28 to 30 branches since we spoke last year, and the channels have remained the same, although they've grown in number, so principally through ATMs and correspondent banks. On slide seven, moving to the macroeconomy, I think we're really pleased to report that compared to the full year 2016 call, when our results were less than sterling, we've had quite a turnaround, and a lot of that may be attributed to the positive changes in the macro environment. If you look at the top left hand of slide seven, inflation is down by about just under 20%. Policy rates has actually decreased further since the full year when it was at 18%. We also have, on the other hand, analysts raising concerns about creeping government debt. And if you look on that slide, there's slight increases in external debt and also domestic debt linked to a number of debt issues that have been raised in the year. But overall, on slide eight, the overall fiscal position is improving relative to what we've had over the last 3 or 4 years. And I think the key thing on that slide is the shrinking fiscal deficit, now down to 5.4. On slide nine, some very interesting trends and developments in the sector. As you know, the key objective for this year is all banks trying to meet the minimum capital requirements of $400 million by the end of this year. We know that there'll be a lot of questions around that on this call. But also significantly, compared to the results that we posted last year, as I said, there's been a recovery amongst within Cal and also amongst our peer group. Much of that can be attributed also to the ESLA bond, which was raised, and that was aimed at purging some of the energy sector debts owed by government to many of the banks, including CalBank. So that issue is very much under resolution, not fully resolved, but certainly has contributed to the improvement in the results for 2017. Some other key developments, there was the introduction of the Ghana reference rate this very week. That's basically a new formula regarding the calculation of interest rates going forward across all banks in Ghana. But also, and I know that a lot of indicators I've had from many of you around the corporate governance guidelines shows that there's a lot of interest in discussing that. The Bank of Ghana introduced new corporate governance guidelines this year, basically to ensure financial soundness in the banking community. Key transactions, some positive transactions, some not so positive transactions. On the negative side, we know we've heard from many of you concerns around the takeover of a few banks, the most recent being Unibank earlier on this year, with KPMG being given a six-month period to administer the bank before it's hopefully handed over to private sector shareholders. Obviously, on the back of what happened with UT and Capital Bank being taken over by Ghana Commercial Bank last year, there were concerns raised by the investor community. And obviously, we're pleased to report that CAL is not within the group of banks for which there is concern around capital adequacy and also governance. And we know that there'll be a lot of questions around that, which the executives will take. So moving on to slide 12, which is the peer review of the list of banks. Unfortunately, we don't have results from the commercial bank yet for 2017. But on slide 12, the general picture is largely a positive one. As you can see, profit after tax for the entire peer group is up, with the exception of Ecobank Ghana, who experienced a dip. We can't report on Ghana Commercial Bank because we don't have that information. But also Access Bank also saw a small dip in profitability. CalBank obviously reported very sterling results, moving from 10.2 million to approximately 153 million in profit after tax. On slide 13, pick up in the sector overall. And on slide 14, which is the non-performing loans slide, you can see that including CAL, there has also been pick up in the non-performing loans ratios almost across the board. And this is reflective of perhaps some of the legacy asset quality issues that are still persisting, some related to the energy sector and some not. And finally, on slide 15, a fairly positive slide as far as returns to shareholders are concerned, pickups in the ROAs across some banks. Obviously, again, CAL, compared to the returns that we posted last year, considerable increase in returns to on assets and also on equity. But some mixed fortunes there. Ecobank, again, reporting dips in ROAs and ROEs, Access Bank as well, and GCB as well as unreported as yet. So a mixed picture as far as returns are concerned, but CAL posting very strong returns compared to last year. So thank you very much. Mr. Redu will take us through the specifics of the 2017 results.
Thank you, Jafar, and good morning to you all. I'll pick it up from slide 16, which summarizes the income statement for the group, focusing more on the financial year for 2017 comparison to 2016. As I'm sure you've been able to glean through the financials, our net interest income between financial year 2016 and 2017 was up almost 40%, and you can see from the net interest margins, which also went up a bit between the 2 years, that impacted on this. In terms of commissions and fees, we just saw some marginal increase over there. And if you look at the balance sheet in terms of our generation of fees coming out of our loan book, you realize that the loan book dropped slightly, obviously coming from the issues that we had in 2016. We were quite cautious in terms of growing the loan book, so that had an impact on the commissions and fees. Trading income arising out of mainly our prop trade and our FX trading saw a marginal decrease of 6%, obviously with the stability in the currency and basically volumes when it comes to trade and foreign currency business was also quite diminished compared to the previous year. The significant thing on the income statement is the reduction in the impairment loss, which reduced by 72%. We've indicated the previous year the challenges that we had, especially in the energy sector, and then some specific challenges that we had with some clients in the commodity trading sector, which we had to recognize those losses. But there were still some challenges that we had in the book during the year that we had to recognize those impairments during the year. This resulted in a profit before tax, a percentage increase of over 1,000% of 218 million compared to 17 million the previous year, and a profit after tax of 153 million compared to 10 million the previous year. The various drivers indicated them, so I would move on straight to slide 21, a summary of the balance sheet. We had balance sheet growth of almost 17%, from 3.6 billion to 4.2 billion. Significant increase was realized in the government security holdings, and basically, as I mentioned earlier on, because of the nature of the quality of loans within the environment, we had to be cautious in terms of the loan growth, so we did not really grow the loan. So all most liabilities that we were able to raise during the year, most of it was channeled into government securities, which we thought were quite safe, considering the challenges that we had in the previous year. Fixed assets also went up significantly. We are almost at the end of the head office project that we've been talking about, so we still incur some cost in there. Deposit growth was quite low, 5%. But this year we've seen some uptick in that, so we do hope that this year that would also go up. Borrowings, we had to carry out some borrowings. IFC, we concluded a transaction with IFC during the year, but there were some short-term borrowings too that we had to carry out for some specific transactions. This resulted in shareholders' funds going up by 29% from 520 million to 672 million at the end of the year. In terms of some specifics, when it comes to the balance sheet, I would move on to slide 24 in terms of the distribution of our loans. There's a significant thing you can see on slide 24, the increase in our retail book. Carrying out our strategy in terms of the growth in our retail book, and during the year, the loan, if we take the loan portfolio, it increased from 15% the previous year to 27% in 2017. Distribution of the loans, so the significant movement that we saw was between electricity, gas, and water, which moved from 21% to 8% of the total book, because a significant transaction which we had completed the prior year was paid out. So that's the drop. Apart from that, most of the movements are not quite significant, and we maintain quite the same structure when it comes to the distribution of our loan book. I move on to slide 27 in terms of our returns. Obviously, with the challenge that we had in 2016, we had quite low returns, which return on our average equity dipped to 2%, and return on our average assets also dipped to 0.3%, but I've gone up to 25.7% and 3.9% respectively. A significant thing on this slide is our capital adequacy ratio, which is 21.9%. As Jifa mentioned earlier, some banks have been challenge within the environment, and one of the main reasons why they've been challenged is the level of their capital adequacy, but we are well capitalized. I'll take you on to page slide 29, which seeks to highlight how we intend to meet the 400 million capitalization as required by the central bank by the end of this year. I'm sure, as you've seen from our annual reports, we are presenting resolutions to the shareholders to approve a transfer in total of 250 million Ghana cedis from distributable reserves into capital. This will bring our CCD capital to 350 million, which will fall short by 50 million compared to the requirement of 400 million. But by the end of this year, we are very certain that there will be enough distributable reserves, which will seek shareholders' approval to transfer the balance at the end of the year. We also seek, because of this transfer that we are carrying out, the directors are not recommending the payment of a dividend, but in lieu of that, are recommending that out of the 250 million, about 78 million of that value is used to issue shares to existing shareholders. That's one share for every seven shares that is held. In terms of strategy, which is on page 31, our strategy in terms of our focus, we are in the last year of our three-year strategy cycle, and it's still our digital strategy which we are pursuing. Our agency banking project is very near completion now. So within this quarter, we hope to launch that product. We have also sought to realign our structure. So from there, we've put together the financial inclusion department, which then would focus on e-banking and digital financial services to our clientele. But in terms of the risk management, in terms of our corporate banking, the strategy basically is the same, and we are on course in terms of delivering that strategy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Oredu. We will take a series of questions now, three at a time, which will then be answered by the management team. Please introduce yourself by mentioning your name and where you are calling from before you ask your question. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Olawareko from SBG Securities. Thank you very much for the presentation. I have a few questions. I'll start with credit losses. So I see the breakdown of sectors that contributed to the improvement, but I would like to get more clarity on what exactly happened with the construction exposure, and what has happened with the energy sector loans. I guess in relation to the issuance of the energy bond, I wanted to know how much did CAL calculate to be owed, and how much is expected to be paid off when there's clarity on the resolution. Also, in terms of MPLs, there was still an increase in MPLs despite the decline in the loan book and credit losses. So I wanted to have more clarity around was this a function of reclassification of loans, and if yes, what sectors were there larger classifications into, say, non-performing loans? Then I would also like a guidance of credit growth for 2018. In terms of the loan book as well, so there was an increase in the percentage that was now retail. So there was a larger percentage of retail for 2017. So I'd just like to get an idea of what's the strategy going forward, given the fact that CAL has always had a larger percentage in the corporate loans. Is that going to be retained? So would corporate continue to remain the top focus while increasing retail, or is there a change in strategy going forward? And also, given the fact that there's been that increase for retail, what would be the justification, seeing that that has driven MPLs in recent years? Then that'll be all for now. Thank you.
Hello, Ola. Could you kindly repeat the last question, please? Concerning the credit loans by distribution type. Thank you.
Okay, so I was asking that there has been an increase in the contribution from of retail loans versus corporate loans, even though corporate loans is still the majority of the book. So I was asking, is there a change in strategy going forward? Should we expect to see a larger percentage of retail in coming years, or was this a one-off that happened in 2017? And the other additional thing I said was, given the fact that retail has been a large contribution to NPLs, is there a justification in the change of strategy, or is there something that's driving this going forward?
Can we have the next set of questions, please?
My name is Derek Mensa, calling from IC Asset Managers. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please proceed.
My question is on asset quality. I take a look at your income statement, and I saw that there's been additional impairment, even though it's been at a significantly lower level compared to 2017. I had some form of write back, given that the ESLA bonds were issued in, so I was expecting some level of write backs coming through and not impairment. If you can give us a bit of color on how much of the ESLA bonds you receive and how much you should anticipate in the form of write backs going forward, if there should be any. On ESLA, the VRA exposure came in at a pricing north of 20%. Following the restructuring with the ESLA bonds, the ESLA bonds come in at about 19%. That means there should be some form of haircut. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I also would like to know if there is any haircut in your VRA exposure. If you've simulated it, you can let us know how much that is. Those would be my questions for now. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Johnson. You see, I'm calling from IC Security. So we noticed that CAL's exposure to the construction sector has declined marginally to 18.4% from 21% in 2016. Unibank was one of the biggest lenders in the construction sector with about 25% exposure to the sector, according to their 2016 financials. So now we want to know whether we are likely to see CAL participating more in the construction space, given the increased growth and participation in the sector. So we know that Unibank is a bit distressed, so will CAL take that opportunity? We see them trying to find more space in this area. That will be my question for now.
If you're still taking questions, this is Jemai from Exotics Capital. I just have a few follow-on questions. First, on the capitalization of $50 million from earnings in 2018, I'd just like to get from you, what the guidance has been on this from the Bank of Ghana. Has there been any communication as to whether banks would be allowed to capitalize such earnings, after the deadline, especially since, you mentioned, I believe, first quarter as the timeline on this. And also just to add on to the asset quality questions, my particular question is really on Q4 increase, especially since you talked about the positive read-through in the energy sector, which has been the key pain point. I'd just like to understand what particular sectors have contributed to that increase and what the outlook is on those sectors.
Jemai,
get a sense from you as to...
Hello, Jemai.
Yes,
can you please repeat that last question? We didn't hear it about the energy sector.
But did you get the question on capitalization?
Yes, we got that. It's the last question. Yes.
Absolutely. So I was asking about pickup in NPLs in Q4. I said that, because you had mentioned particularly that you saw a positive read-through, as we all know, in the energy sector in that particular quarter, it would be interesting to understand what sectors have contributed to the increase and what the outlook will be for those sectors, as well as to get a sense from you as to your normalized cost of risk for the bank. Also, a question was asked to your retail and corporate loan strategy going forward. I would just like to get a target mix from you for the medium to long term in terms of the split of those two. And lastly, to get a sense of what your dividend policy payout is in 2018 and onwards. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. We'll start the responses with the question from Ola in terms of the NPL in the construction and energy sectors. As you're aware, in 2016 we had significant challenges in the energy sector. What we did in 2016 was to write off some of the balances within the energy sector, specifically the BDCs, which we thought the government was not going to make payment for. So at that time, we wrote off about 30% of the outstanding balance on our books, which contributed to the high impairment charge in 2016. In 2017, though some of the payments have been made in terms of the energy sector, that did not fully cover the outstanding balance that we had with regard to that sector. Though, and we expect the government to come up with some sort of payments also within this quarter. So, in terms of provision, one person, I think it was Derek, who asked about whether there was any write back with regard to that sector. The government hasn't fully paid out the 70%, which was left. So we did not write back anything when it comes to that sector. The construction sector, we've had some challenges in the construction sector, and I'm sure as you are aware, there were some our construction sector principally is due to the private sector. We do not have quite a lot of direct government related construction projects, but we've also been faced with some sort of challenges in that sector due to the dip in the real estate market. So we had to also take some provisions for that during the year. In terms of the I would also then link this question to the question by Derek in terms of VRE, where since I'm talking about the energy sector, whether we had a haircut, our exposure to VRE, we haven't taken any haircut from government on our exposure. That is not impaired. In terms of credit growth in the retail sector, as we've kept saying, we've had some sort of focus on the retail sector to be able to grow our retail book for various reasons. So we are seeing the benefits of that come through. As to whether this would impact on our strategy in terms of our corporate activity, we will still focus on our corporate franchise. We would also make sure that would grow, but would also ensure that through the various strategies that we have in terms of our SMU growth, in terms of our retail book, we grow that one so that we have a very good balance between what the retail book is and what the corporate book is. The retail book did not contribute significantly to the growth in the MPPOs that we have for the year. I would move on to Derek's questions in terms of the SLAB bonds. We've received 88 million so far, 88 million CDs from governments so far. We expect about 90 million more, and that should be able to cover our exposure that we have on our books. To Johnson's question, whether we are participating in the construction sector. Well, we have some exposure over there, as I've said, but the sector at the moment is also an area of concern because since the change in government, we've seen that payment to the sector, especially those direct contracts from government and contracts from Cocoa Board, which quite a number of contractors do have some outstanding balances due from both government and Cocoa Board are currently not being paid. So it's a sector that we'll be cautious about. Though Unibank had quite a lot of exposure in there, we will not jump onto it because of the challenges that they have. Capitalization after the deadline. We've had discussions with the central bank, and the central bank, what the indication they've given is that the directive did say that you can transfer from income to surplus when the accounts have been audited. So the central bank has given an indication that if you can show a very clear route that you after your audit in 2018, you would be able to meet that deadline. They would give you an extended PPP period so that you go through your audits and then be able to meet that deadline. So that conversation, we've had it with the central bank, and we hope that we'll hear from them formally. And retail ideal mix. per our strategy and our budget, we expect to do anything between 35% to 40% in terms of retail, and then the balance would be the corporate book. Dividend payout in 2018. Obviously, we've indicated that we need to transfer some amount of some 50 million into CEDEC Capital at the end of 2018. Had a recommendation or always from the board to pay up to 33% of profit after tax. Though we've averaged about 27% to 30%. So based on profitability for 2018 and the need to meet the 400 million, the directors would determine how much to be paid out in dividend in 2018.
Sorry, Jumai, I'd just like to go back to your question about the Bank of Ghana capitalizing to 20. So, you know, this is not, you know, something we've just pulled out of a hat. We were required last year in November, all the banks were required to submit a capitalization plan to the central bank, which we and other banks did. So, you know, the Bank of Ghana is perfectly aware officially that this is our capital plan, and there's been no pushback against that. So it's not sort of just guesswork. There's been formal engagement with Bank of Ghana on this.
Can we proceed with our next set of questions, please?
Look, it's Derek here again. Just a quick follow-up to the ESLA receivables you got. You said you had 88 million and then you're expecting 90 million. Am I to assume that all of this is coming out of your BDC exposure?
Yes.
Hi there. It's Seki Motokwa from Ashmore. Just a couple of things, please. I think I saw that Mr. Radu had talked about the potential to maybe raise capital in 2019 or 2020 to meet growth and capital requirements. Could I just ask what your base case sort of loan growth average is, let's say between now and 2020 or 2019, depending on what you can talk about? And then also, can I ask you what you think the average sort of cost of risk either through the cycle or over your next sort of budget period should average? And then finally, in the comments on the presentation, you talked about a low NPL ratio and maintaining that. What to you is a low NPL ratio? Thank you.
Please, can we have any more questions?
Hi, I'm Elike Agosu, Asset Management. I have a question about the cost-to-income ratio. In 2016, all expenses in there, and we noticed that going from 2015, cost-to-income ratio was 35.9%.
Performance.
Can you repeat your last question on the cost-to-income ratio?
I wanted to find out one. IFRS 9, I know 2018 is the implementation date. I wanted to find out if there are any simulations in terms of what impairments, additional impairments which CAL should be expecting. And in light of that, what will be your cost of risk guidance for at least 2018? I also wanted to understand with the introduction of the Ghana reference rate, which I think has been recently introduced. I wanted to find out what the impact will be on your pricing and subsequently how it will affect your funded income. I believe it's a bit below your base rate, so how will that affect your pricing going forward? And then I think finally on, I noticed that your interest expense for deposit from banks increased sharply, although the volume was quite low in terms of volume from deposits from banks were low. I wanted to understand how that happened. Is it because things repriced quickly? If I could get a bit more color on that, those would be my questions.
All right. So thank you from Ashmore. Yes, in my I'd like to say a letter to shareholders, as if I was Warren Buffett. In my MD's address in the 2017 statement, I did talk about the possibility of raising money further capital in 2019-2020. And basically, it's as a result of the effect of Basel 2 and 3 on our numbers going forward. So, not necessarily because of anything else. Adequacy, I expect that when we start casting our accounts and according to dictates of Basel II, we should see a certain drop in the capital adequacy ratio. If based on existing risks embedded in our balance sheet, seeing as we are going to take on more risk going forward because we are a bank, there's a potential to raise money in 2019 or 2020. Our base loan growth will have an effect on that, and typically we grow around 35% per annum apart from last year. This year we already see an uptick in the loan growth rate, so the potential is raising further capital in 2019. Our cost of risk will average what it is today, which is about 3%. What we consider to be a low NPL ratio. By policy, we endeavor to have an NPL ratio of 10% and below. We also have financial covenants with funding agencies whom we've taken monies from, medium to long-term monies from, to maintain an LPA ratio of 10% and below. So we are contract-bound and policy-bound to have to keep our MPR ratios below 10%. IFRS 9 stipulations, we are already applying IFRS 9 as of January of this year. We did the simulations last year. Yes, there were some additional impairments, but as we get used to the 13 million additional impairment, obviously as we get used to IFRS 9, we'll learn how to manage it optimally. Ghana reference rate and its impact on our pricing. Yes, we don't have a problem with Ghana reference rate. The problem that I personally have with it is the frequency of change, which is every month. That makes it, administering it becomes a little cumbersome. Nonetheless, we still have the margin for risk determined by the bank based on the risk that you are presented with. Yes, it is true that it is below our current base rate. I don't think that should be too much of a problem, because whilst we had a base rate of about 27, we didn't have any margin exceeding 5%. Other banks in the market would have had base rates around 15% and would have had margins up to 20%. So really, it's end of the day, it's just the maths of it, you know. But of course, we are looking forward to a reduction in the loan price, because the higher the price, the higher the default. I didn't get the question on deposits from banks. I didn't understand that question. The import of it was lost on me. I'm sorry.
Okay, so with the issue on the interest expense in relation to deposit from bank, this is not related. Though our deposits. The deposits in total go up significantly, but if you look at deposit mix in terms of currency, which can be found on slide 23, you realize that our local currency deposits went up. And if you also look at the same slide in
this is Na Ayoko, Cow Bank Limited. Kindly hold. We'll be with you shortly. We would like to apologize for the cut in the call. We'll be with you shortly. Are there any more questions, please? Any more questions, please? In the absence of questions, we would like to end the call now. A recording of the call will be sent to you by email. Thank you for joining us and enjoy the rest of your day.